بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سورة آل عمران انذر واتقوا الله لعلكم تفلحون. سورة النساء commences with يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم. So the one surah is ending up with taqwa, and the next surah is commencing with taqwa. It's impressing upon us that you will get yourself aligned as long as you've got taqwa. And if you don't have taqwa, then you'll be beating around the bush, you won't get anywhere. So it's commencing with taqwa, and the previous surah is ending up with taqwa. This first surah, first verse of Surah Nisa is often heard at a nikah khutbah. اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُم مِّن نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا. The second thing that we need to understand is Surah Ala Imran relates to our relationship between us and non-Muslims. How do we relate? How do we take them? Do we take them as bosom friends? Do we share our secrets with them? Do we take them as confidants? Do we take them in marriage? So overall, Surah Ala Imran discusses this. لا تتخذوا بطانة من دونكم لا يألونكم خبالا. Confidant, then not from within outside your ranks, from within your rank, not from outside your ranks, because they will not fail to bring about your failure. They will not hesitate. The whole focus is somehow you must collapse, you must fall down. One person suggested to Umar radiallahu anhu that there is a person, there is a secretary, or call it a katib. In that zamana, the scribe used to be the secretary, he used to be the advisor, he used to be the confidant. So someone suggested to Umar radiallahu anhu that this Jewish or Christian person is an excellent scribe, excellent confidant. You can consult with him. His advice is immaculate. So Umar radiallahu anhu replied, then in that case, I would have not acted upon the verse, لا تتخذوا بطانة من دونكم. Don't take a confidant from without your ranks. But Huzaifa ibn al-Yaman is a leading Sahabi. And he was posted to somewhere, Sham, Syria. And he settled here and he married a Jewish woman or a Christian woman. But Umar radiallahu anhu heard about this and he sent him a letter that divorce. Huzaifa radiallahu anhu asks the Amir al-Mu'mineen that is it haram to marry a Kitabi? So Umar radiallahu anhu's reply went back that before you leave this letter of mine, you see to it that this woman is divorced. And then the reason for Umar radiallahu anhu asking him and instructing him to divorce were multiple. The basic reason is that Huzaifa radiallahu anhu will be looked up as a precedent, a Sahabi now in that part of the world. So look, people are looking at him as a sahibu sirr in Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, as the confidant of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. So whatever he does, then that becomes a precedent. Now if you look at the Roman, if you look at Syria, then it's got a rich Roman culture. So there's quite a bit of Roman effects here. even the people, many of them were from Western origin. So you find even the Arabs have got that color of complexion. There must have been a lot of intermarrying. So they've got that complexion. Right? Now imagine a leading Sahabi, people look at him for a precedent as a guide, and if he gets married to one of these girls, what will happen to the rest of the Sahaba Kiram or the people that are living there? You will say, well, the leader who is our Imam, he's the leader, we take the cue from him. He's married a Kitabi, he's married a Jewish woman or a Christian woman, then why can't we? And then this Roman woman are a little bit of the fairer complexion. And then it's a young person's choice, a young person's preference, that he wants someone with a fairer complexion. He'll go for that. A little bit of blue eyes and fairer complexion, any youngster will go towards that. وَكَفَى بِفِتْنَةً لِنِسَاءِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ. And that will impact as a fitna for the Muslim woman. Now everybody is going for that. Muslims have got their own children. Who's going to marry them? Don't they have feelings? What is going to happen to this woman here? That gets stranded, then this creates a fitna. So Umar radiallahu anhu stops him. No, you, before this letter is left, you would see to it that you divorce this woman. Number four, there's a sight and there's a vision of Umar radiallahu anhu, and he says divorce. So one way to collapse a government is to get within the hierarchy. So if they get this type of woman, Christian, Jewish woman, etc., into that level of people, parliament level, right? Now they can extract the hukumat secrets and they can pass it on. And so easy it becomes to collapse or to manipulate a country. How easy it becomes. So this was the vision, this was the sight of Umar radiallahu anhu. And therefore, our Buzurgan ad-Din, they impress upon this point that you listen to your Kabir. Listen to your elders. The experience they have got, the exposure they have, the understanding they have is far, far greater than what you can imagine. Sometimes you can see a thing and you may see the thing to the point that you can understand. And then they are seeing things beyond what you can see. Right? And they don't have the time, they don't have the occasion to explain to you the secret of everything. Some things you will see it in time yourself. And some things are quite clear. But your fortune is, listen to them. With time you will begin to understand what they are talking about. You may not see it straight away, but with time you will see it. Then, if you didn't see it when they had asked you to see it, right? Then you didn't follow it when they asked you to follow it. Now, 20 years in time, now you understand that, oh, I made a slip up. Now to reverse the thing takes a lot of time, a lot of difficulty. So the simple thing is they told you something, now just go on with it. In time you will see the secret, the wisdom of it. One young person comes to Thani Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. Young people are fired up, their knowledge is fresh. So there are a lot of questions, a lot of queries. Thani Sahib Rahmatullah tells him that it seems like you've got pride. So he retorts saying, well, I think you're mistaken. I said, well, I don't have a personal relationship with him. And I can't tell him more than this. Ended it up, yeah, mashallah, good luck to you. End up. This Buzurgan ad-Din, when someone answers them in this manner, and this is the type of response, they don't get into an argument. They don't get into a discussion. Bahut acha. That's the reply. Bahut acha. Very good. All right. Be it as you say. May it be as you say. In fact, they will pray for that person. May it be as you say. After approximately 5 years, this person comes back. See, it's man's tabiat. Inna al-insana layatgha ar-ra'ahu istaghna. When you see yourself to be a little bit financially strong, then it brings about an attitude. And that attitude wants you to do things freely, not to get it screened out by anybody. No, I've got the money, I've got the power, I've got the muscle. Then why must I listen? So that's the attitude that wealth comes up with. So this Buzurgan ad-Din understand that this is where it's coming from. It's coming from that attitude, and that attitude is coming from wealth. So now, when I am going to discuss with him, if it is his fortune, then he will listen. And if it is not his fortune, he will not listen. Now, why must I get stuck up with a person? I had been good towards him. I wished well for him, but he doesn't want to accept. So why must I go and force myself onto him? The day his mind opens up, it will open up. No, I left it. I've done what I needed to do. And then it's left. It's his prerogative after that. His choice, what he wants to do. Now after 5 years, he's in sorrow, he's in tears. And he comes to Moa, I made a big blunder. I made a massive, big blunder. Now I come to the conclusion that really I've got it. I've got a big problem in myself. It took him 5 years to discover that he's got the problem. Moa showed it to him in one shot, in one sitting, showed it to him. And it took him 5 years to discover it. Moa said, alright, now it's left to you now. You want to correct yourself, alright, we'll show you. But then Moa began to explain, see, this man here, had he accepted this piece of advice in the first instance, then he would have been 5 years ahead. That would have been so much ahead, right? The chances are that this problem would have been eliminated from his system, right? Now it's so deep into his system, now to get it out is going to be difficult, it's going to be a task. See, that cancer had just set in, and to nip it in the bud would have been much more easier. Would have avoided all that radium theory, everything that treatment you didn't need. Because it just started off and you nibbled it, you corrected it straight away. Went into a different diet plan, etc. The thing just got cleared up completely from the system. It was just started off and you caught it on the right time. But now you didn't listen to the doctor, that thing went deep into the system. Now it went to the point where you have to chip and trim and operate, etc. Oh, that gangrene went deep into the system. Now you have to chop the whole leg right until the knee. Now the man lost his leg. But now, at the cost of what? At the cost of that advice of the doctor. The doctor told him at the beginning, "Bhai, this is your problem. You need to go on to this plan here. You correct yourself, inshallah, you will save yourself." But he said, no, I don't need this thing here. So, all right, that's your choice. I can't do anything beyond this. I told you what I need to tell you. From my experience, this is what it seems like. But you don't want to listen to me, that I can't force myself onto you. So anyway, we are speaking about taqwa. This last surah, it ends up with taqwa, and this next surah starts off with taqwa. But Umar radiallahu anhu explained that he stopped him on his tracks, "Don't you get married here." Now imagine if all the Sahaba ikram were getting married to this type of woman. We see ourselves with our own eyes, what's the result of the mixed marriages that are taking place around us. There's no direction in the child. The child doesn't know to go on the direction of the mother or the direction of the father. For the youngster, it's very good. Well, the Quran Sharif says, so what's wrong in it? But then after 10 years, 15 years, and when you get children coming up, and the child he's in a mixed state. Father is saying something, mother is saying something. Go see what's happening in Ukraine. See what's happening. Children from mixed stock. Around us, see what's going around us. People that got married to Christians, etc. And what's happening to their children? No direction. Delinquent, not this side, not that side. They're all mixed up and confused. But now this is that side, this is that vision of our Kabir, our Buzurgan al-Din. When they tell you something, listen to them. They don't have the time, and you don't have the time as well, for you to be able to comprehend them completely. But time will show that this is the secret, this is the mystery in the advice. That only time can tell. It's your fortune to just listen to them. Without you even understanding what they are saying, just listen to them. In fact, the mark of love is just to execute the command. Now, if you tell your wife, "I want this to be prepared. Why? When? How? What? Is it important? Must I do it today? Can't you get someone else to do it? Really, is it important? Really important? And if I don't do it, then what?" Is that a mark of love? The mark of love is, you got the instruction. Husband said this, and I love him to bits. I just need to do it. That's a mark of love. And when you don't have that love, then all these questions come about. So if you have the love for Allah Ta'ala and His Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, you have the love of His representative, Lama, Mashayikh, etc., it will just carry on. You depend on their knowledge. You have the trust, the deep level of trust. This is what they have said. Let me just go on with it. Time will show me the secret and it will unravel the mysteries. Now I can't see it myself. But with a little bit of passage of time, the father told the son, see son, this whole estate I'm leaving it to you. And you see this patch here looks very unsightly. It doesn't look beautiful at all. But just leave it here. Just leave it. Don't interfere with that. The rest of the palace and all, whatever you want to adjust and all, do whatever you want to do. But this patch here that looks very unsightly, just leave it. Now the father died and he's gone. And the child thinks to himself, well, the father said this much that I must leave this patch here and continue with everything else. But why? This is looking so unsightly. The rest of the palace is looking so beautiful and attractive, and I must leave this thing here. So ugly and unsightly. Anyway, one day, second day, but my father said, mustn't interfere with that. And the third day, it got to me, said, no, let me get it out. Let me take it out of the scene completely. The moment he took it out, then the pythons came, the cobra came. Then it endangered his life. His one child died. The father knew that this was like an antidote. It would keep everything else away. But the child couldn't see it. He couldn't understand what was the wisdom, what was the mystery behind it. And he just heard his father out. He would have seen the good himself. So Rasulullah says many things. Right? He tells us, for example, إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ تَنْهَى عَنِ الْفَحْشَاءِ وَالْمُنْكَرِ. Do the namaz correctly. Do it properly, timelessly, correctly. With the adab, do it properly. The second namaz must be better than the first namaz. Do it properly. Put your mind and soul into it. Like you put your mind and soul into the business. I can't just remain at one place. I can't stagnate. I need to progress on. If it is at this level, then the next year's projection is something else. And the following year's projection is something else. Mufti Muhammad Shafi Sahib Rahmatullah says that one wealthy person in Karachi used to come up to him. And one day he came up with a very heavy head, very sorrowful. I made a big loss. 100 million, I made a loss. Big wealthy person. So Mora consoled him, you lost, such a big loss you made. Then why don't you do some small business? Why don't you do something small, manageable, etc. You can continue with your life. So he tells Mora, you don't understand our concept of loss. I had projected that I will make 1,000 million. And I lost, I only made 900 million. So that's the concept of loss. See, how they look at loss is different. See, I made 900 million, I lost that 100. I'm so sorry about it. I could have made 1,000, but what stopped me from getting the 1,000? So now this is his concept, this is understanding of loss. So Rasulullah is saying that this is the thing that you need to put your mind into. Now the businessman is always projecting, he can't remain stagnated in one spot. Finance minister, whoever else, but I have come to this point, next year I must do something else. The third year I must do something else and I must continue. And if I don't, if I remain stagnated, then I'll go backwards. So that's the fear, that's the apprehension he's got. So the barometer of a life of a Muslim is his namaz. That's the barometer. You want to measure the child, that Muslim, that just look at his namaz. You look at his namaz, then you see he's progressing or he's going backwards. That next namaz is better than the past namaz. Every coming namaz is better than the past namaz. He's got it. And you see it, and you just want to admire the person. Go on seeing his namaz. See how beautiful he's doing his ruku, his sajda, his qiyam. But you just want to go and admire him all the time. Like he's put out a new car, you want to go and admire it. Alright, you admire the car. 2 minutes, 1 minute is enough. After that, you get tired of it now. It's a Porsche or so, then what? Uske baad phir kya? You get tired of it. A lot of people come to Springer Beach. So no, I'll put up a mansion in front of the beach. Then they put up that mansion, they fulfill the dream of this. Then after 2 years, you tell the chacha, "Bhai, chacha, how are you enjoying this?" So no, the first month I came, I looked at the beach. After that, I don't know when I looked at the beach. So this is dunya. Dunya, it's got its limit. It will give you that satisfaction to that point. After that, it's finished. It's just a dream. But here is something, you're looking at the person, he's just giving you some additional delight. Some more delight, some additional delight, some excitement. What's it? It's the relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allah ta'ala is unlimited. So the things that are related to Allah ta'ala is unlimited. The beauty can't be, you can't comprehend that beauty. You're looking at the Kaaba Sharif and you're moving away after the duration and you're crying, Allah Baak, call me again, Allah Baak, please. I don't know what mistake I made, I'm going back. But Allah Baak, call me again. What is it? It's that magnificence. is that manifestation of the beauty of Allah Ta'ala, the Jalal and Jamal of Allah Ta'ala, that's coming down the Kaaba Sharif, that's attracting your heart. You're crying. What's there in the Kaaba Sharif? Outwardly, you look at it, what's there? There's nothing to attract you. But what's attracting the Muslim's heart? So that second namaz ready to be more beautiful than the first namaz all the time. And you see that namaz has an attraction, it's got a beauty. And the moment something went off, you're feeling so upset, hey, I didn't get it right. Something went off. From Zuhr to Asr, you are really stressing one tabi'i, he missed his takbira ula. So three people came to offer the condolence. And he cried very bitterly. He says, today, if I had incurred a loss of 1 million, the whole of Kufa would have come to offer the condolence. I missed one namaz here. Only three people came to offer the condolence. You see what they had invested in the namaz. What they invested in the namaz, they put so much of importance into that namaz. That's a barometer of the Muslim's life. So that namaz, tanha anil fahshai wal munkar. You got it right, and it's stopping you from anything that is indecent. Anything that is wrong, your heart will tell you, no, this is not right, by I ni karwanu mal, ye karne ki cheez nahi hai. Your heart is saying, don't do it. You created that resistance within yourself. What created the resistance? That namaz. But when Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam told you, you didn't take the namaz so importantly. You just took it by the way. Now, had you attached that importance to that namaz without looking for the philosophy and without looking for the reasoning, you would have found that namaz would have prevented you. It would have been a guide for you. It would have been a precedent for you. But you didn't take Rasulullah so seriously. By the way, if I want to first namaz, I have to do it. If I postpone it, what's the difference? The whole sky didn't come falling down upon me. Didn't come crashing down upon me. So you didn't invest in that namaz. You don't know what that namaz can bring for you. You invested in the namaz. You tried to beautify. You tried to perfect. You, as you are preparing for the namaz, half an hour before, you got that concern that I'm going to perform my namaz. Going to the toilet. But in the toilet also, you're concerned about your namaz. Making that wuzu also, but your mind is in the namaz. You're coming to the masjid, you're walking or coming by car. The concern is about the namaz. How must I get the namaz? I'm going to talk to Allah Ta'ala. How must I talk to Allah Ta'ala? So now, will it be possible for that person's mind to be distracted from his namaz? It won't be possible. And the namaz then will bring about that consciousness, that awareness of Allah Ta'ala. And this is what the Quran is speaking about. فَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تُفْلِحُونَ يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ. So, one was the taqwa that related to غَيْرُوا كَسَاتْ, strangers. In other words, people that are not within your parameters, not within your yard, outsiders, non-Muslims. Non-Muslims are outsiders. And one is interacting with people that are within the parameters. One is beyond the parameters, your neighbors, etc. How do you relate to them? Non-Muslims, how do you relate to them? And one is those people that are living within your property, within your yard, that is your own, your blood, your Muslim brother. Then how do you relate to them? Now this surah is discussing this in detail. How do you relate to your brother? When you talk of contracts, you talk of dealings, you talk of interaction, then there is two levels of it, you see. One is to take things by the book, alright? I must give an allowance, I gave an allowance. I must see to it that I'm there at home, so I'm there at home, alright. I must get her groceries and clothing, etc., so I've done that. So that's one level of taqwa, that you have completed and fulfilled. You have executed one level of your duty and one level of your obligation. But there's another level of your obligation. And that is very discreet. This you can measure it. Whether you gave her the groceries, you gave her the allowance, you gave her the rental, lights and water, you gave her all that. That you can see it, right? And there's another level of taqwa that is not visible. To the common person, is not visible. And that level is, now, how do you interact with the family, with the children? How do you interact? Is there love there? Is there warmth? Do you talk to them with kindness, with love, with respect, etc.? Or you're giving them material, but you're not showing that type of love, that type of bond, not showing it. She asks you something and you're giving a one-word answer. Your son is talking to you and you are not interested, you're disinterested in him. Small little thing happened, you're not interested in the person. Now, this man can't pick it up. You can't say now, you can't define this type of taqwa. Can you define it in the book? Can you find any definition for this? You can't find a definition. Now, Allah is watching this. Ittaqu rabbakum. That's a personal relationship. Wife and husband. Son and father. It's a personal relationship. Know that Allah is watching you. Like you are watching Allah Ta'ala and you want the favors from Allah Ta'ala. Right? Then Allah Ta'ala wants you to be favorable towards His bondsmen as well. Your wife, your children, people that are immediate under you. Are you looking at them favorably as well? You want the favors very well. But then do you pass it on? So now that level of taqwa, that is very, very discreet. It's very subtle. Do you practice on that level of taqwa? Or do you count that not as that required amount of taqwa? See this. That personal relationship. She wants a smile. She wants you to talk. And you're not talking. You're not talking. You're not giving her a smiling face. Alright. You say that. Alright, let's carry on. Sulky. And you don't consider that. You don't count that as taqwa. That's the irony. That's the tragedy. That you don't even count that as taqwa. No, I fulfilled her rights. Whatever she wanted, I gave it to her. What else she wants? She wants me to make sajda for her. She asked for something and I gave it to her. And now what else she wants? So you see this, ittaqu rabbakum. He's looking right inside. Allah is looking right inside. If you wanted that attention and she was giving you one word answers, she's giving you sulky looks, and she was in the bed but she's moved around completely opposite end, no responses from her. When you want a personal relationship, there's no response from her. Yeah, carry on. See? How do you feel? Is that taqwa? And do people count that as taqwa? They don't, you look at any person, they won't count that as taqwa. Now this is the taqwa that Allah is talking about. Ittaqu rabbakum. He's looking right inside you. He knows what you are going, what you are doing. The attitude that you are showing, the disregard that you are showing, the disinterest that you are showing. He knows exactly what you are doing. Don't you think Allah doesn't know about it? Inna Allah kana alaykum raqiba. This whole verse is ending up two times with taqwa, and the last verse, Inna Allah kana alaykum raqiba. He's ever watchful. He's seeing you through and through. He knows what's going exactly. If the son is showing disinterest or the father is showing disinterest, how does the child feel? Or how does the son feel? How does the wife feel? Or how does the husband feel? Don't you know? Inna Allah kana alaykum raqiba. That he's watching. He knows what's going on. Don't you remain in a dream that Allah doesn't know what's going on. He knows exactly what's going on. The game that you are playing, he knows it. Yes, if it is a genuine deeni reason, then that's an exception. A genuine deeni reason why you have shown disinterest, that's a different thing. Rasulullah is passing on Ansari's home, and that was a little bit slightly built up, like a dome or something. Inquired, whose home is this? Ansari's home. That Ansari came to the majlis, Rasulullah refused to greet him. Refused to answer his greeting, salam. Inquired, what happened? Ya Rasulullah. He found out from some other person, what happened? Oh, this is what happened. This was the thing that brought about some type of displeasure, perhaps. He went straight away. I can't tolerate this. He went and demolished the whole thing, raised it to the ground. He didn't come and inform Rasulullah again. Now, Rasulullah now goes past there and he sees, oh, this is what? So, Rasulullah was obviously pleased. See my sahabi. I didn't even mention it to him. It was just an expression of disapproval. Just an expression. I didn't even have to say anything verbally. But look at his love. He has actually allowed my love to overwhelm him. My love for him is so deep that he's overwhelmed the person. Now how great and how excited, how pleased Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has been with him. And he was someone from our zamana, today's zamana. He said, Ya Rasulullah, maintenance is a big problem, you know. And this is not fuzul kharchi, it's not israf and all that. It's not wastage. It's maintenance free now. We put it up like this, maintenance free. Now we're putting mud walls and all that. Every now and then the rainy season comes, everything getting washed out. And charge costing us too much, you know. It's multiplying and everything is just inflating all the time. So this is maintenance free, Ya Rasulullah. See, love, muhabbat, khud tujhe adab-e muhabbat sikha degi. That muhabbat will create that type of consciousness and that awareness. That mahbub doesn't like it.
Finish. I don't want to hear any discussion. I don't want to hear any story. He doesn't like it, doesn't like it. Finish. If Nabi Sallam doesn't like it, then what's the good of this place here? If he himself doesn't like it, what's the good? What's the good of the stone? What's the good of that water? What's the good of that sand? There's no good, absolute no good in it. My Nabi Sallam doesn't like it. So there can't be any appeal, there can't be any attraction in that. See, taqwa, what taqwa is talking about. Now this is how the man's mind will think, that my Allah Pak doesn't like it. My Nabi Sallam doesn't like it, so can this ever have an appeal in my eyes? Can it have an attraction? Then I will say, can you work out a plan? You know, so much of tax we have got to pay and whatever else. You know, can't we do this and the tax write-off? And we do an insurance plan and so much of tax write-off we'll get. So he's not going to look for any loopholes. You know, my Nabi Sallam doesn't like it. Take it out. I don't want to see it. I don't want to hear it. He doesn't like it. He doesn't like it. Now, Nabi Sallam hears about you. How great doesn't he feel? This is my loyal banda. He's not looking for loopholes. He's not looking around, you know, to bypass the system. So, ittaqu rabbakum. Alladhi khalaqakum min nafsin wahida. It's all alluding towards the factors that factors of taqwa, why you should have a taqwa. Talking of mutual relationship, people that are within the boundaries now, people that are within the yard. Now how do you interact with them? اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ أَلَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ مِن نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا. From a single soul. So all of you are alike, coming from one root. So why do you consider yourself to be superior to the other one? اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ أَلَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ مِن نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا. You are identical to him, coming from the same root. Then why do you demand some type of superiority over your brother? Why do you feel something superior of yourself? Because of your wealth? Because of your complexion? Because of your position? اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ أَلَّذِي خَلَقَكُمْ مِن نَفْسٍ وَاحِدًا وَبَثَّ مِنْهُمَا رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً. And then again, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامِ. You fear that Allah Ta'ala, in whose name you demand your rights. You got a right. He's owing you a million. But for sake of Allah Ta'ala, please pay my rights. Pay my dues. You don't have to go for Hajj and all that. I got some obligations. I got some of my own personal needs. By in the name of Allah Pak, I'm asking you. Don't you ask your debtors in the name of Allah Ta'ala. So fear that Allah Ta'ala, whose name you take when you're demanding your rights for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, by do this thing for me. Darulum Dioban was the Shaykh al Hadith Mawlana Muhammad Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. Was firm, but a sense of humor also he had, you know. And he was a Shaykh al Hadith, he was a Qutub of the time. Mawlana Tamim Rahmatullah Alayhi, from the three famous personalities that he quotes, one is Mawlana Muhammad Yaqub Sahib. Three people he quotes normally, Muhammad Yaqub Sahib, Mawlana Gangohi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, and Haji Imdadullah Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi. These are three people he quotes, all the time. Wherever he's writing about them. So Mawlana had a sense of humor as well. Now, sometimes children are playing, you know, and they're not working like they're supposed to be working. So he'll discipline them, give it to them. And unfortunately, now you can't do it. In the madrasas at home, you can't do it. Can't discipline, can't correct. Now it's child abuse, child line. The child is going on to wrong, womanizing, etc. That's all right. That's all right. If he's dressing like a baboon, it's all right. Everything else will go right. But no, he's not reading namaz, he's not doing the right things. You can't correct that child. You can't. It's a big crime. So in the old days, they used to correct the child. They used to spank him, correct him, give it to him, and bring him on the line. Within limits, obviously, they knew how to correct. So the child would thank the father in his latter years, then he would correct the father. The spanking of the father brought me right. Had the father not spanked me, I wouldn't have been where I am today. He shouted at me, they stopped me from certain privileges, etc. Really, they did the good for me. At that time, I was too naive to understand why they were restraining me. But today, I do understand. When I see, I compare people that are my contemporaries, you know, then I begin to realize what they have done for me. Well, they had to get me up early in the Fajr and go for classes, come back. I was feeling so restrained, so difficult, so bored about the whole exercise. Monday to Saturday, there's a program, full program in place. But now today, I do understand, after so many years, I do understand what my parents were doing for me, you see. So, three-quarter of deen is just following. Afterwards, after many years, you begin to understand the beauty of that following. That beauty only comes afterwards. It doesn't come straight away. The child now, So the father, he can tell the father, you know, the whole world is playing around. They're sleeping and they're well relaxed. They're more focused in school. Now I must get up so early, go to class, take sabak, then go to school, then come back, go class again, and then do my door and whatever else. You're putting me into this program. Then when he sees those people going and losing and wasting their lives, then he says, oh, what my Abba done for me. Now only I appreciate. I only appreciate now. In the grave, when the Muslim is asked, right? And there's one thing about the grave that every Muslim will aspire to be in the grave. Right? Where he's asked, what do you say about this person here? So the hadith doesn't explain how it's going to happen. But the commentators say that a mu'min will be shown Rasulullah Pak Sallam in life. He will be shown Rasulullah Sallam in life. Now that creates an aspiration for death. Hey, I want to see Rasulullah Pak Sallam. I want to see him face to face. The hadith doesn't say clearly how it's going to happen. But this is the statement of the commentators. They have got a lot of facts. They accumulate all the facts and this is what they come up with. That the mu'min is shown Rasulullah Sallam face to face. So how great won't you feel? Imagine Rasulullah was here today. I won't be surprised if everybody jump here. They may just go into sajda just now. They won't be able to contain themselves. Will you be able to contain yourself? With his magnificence, his beauty, his greatness, and he's here in person. What is you see him in a dream and what is you see him in person? What will happen to you? So the Muslim will give the reply as is required and desired of him. And the kafir, when he is asked, then he will say, ha ha. La adri. I don't know anything. In a ghabrat state, in a state of ghabrat. I don't know what. So the malaika will rebuke him. And the words of rebuke that the malaika will use, la daraita wa la talaita. That's the words. La daraita wa la talaita. Right. The explanation they give of these two words is another thing on its own. It's not a hadith class now that I have to give the whole explanation. The whole literal translation, etc. But I will give you the meaning that is coming out of it. La daraita wa la talaita. In other words, in our language, you didn't take the trouble to understand it yourself. You didn't take the trouble to understand it yourself, nor did you take the trouble to follow someone. Can be one of two situations. You take the trouble to learn it yourself, get a perfect understanding. One chacha was meeting me one of these days, quite an intelligent person, and very fairly, very fairly in all goodness, he says, why don't you teach the children the meaning of the Quran Sharif? I said, no, very good, give us the time, we'll give it, we'll explain that to them. But they aren't giving us the time, they're coming here for 3 years, and they want hifz, and they want Quran, Tajweed, everything to be squashed up, crash course, they mustn't get crushed then. Then I explained to them. So now see the Arabs and all, they know the language. And I said, all right, they know the language. But are they doing justice to the Quran Sharif? I showed him one simple example. The confusion they cause, just by saying, you know the Quran Sharif, we can apply it in any situation, we can give it. You know, my one friend was on the plane, and he had an Arab, coming from pure Arab stock, Ibn Mas'ud Rayyan's family, he's coming from that family. Absolutely pure Arab stock. There's no doubt about the lineage, right? So that Arab that was sitting beside him, he is just eating that meat. He just eating the meat one way. So these Tabligh Jamaat people, my friend, they are a little bit cautious as to how they talk. They want to get the person right now, but they can't go direct now. Somehow they'll get the person into a conversation, etc. Somehow discreetly they get to him. So they asked. He asked this person here by sitting next to him, "How are you? Where are you coming from?" And by the way, this meat here isn't halal. He said, "Yeah. What's wrong with that?" The Quran Sharif says, "See now how they go straight to the Quran." Fakulu mimma dhukira smullahi ali. Eat that meat upon which the name of Allah Ta'ala has been taken. So when I eat this, I just say Bismillahi r-Rahmani r-Rahim. Then I eat. I ate the meat upon which the name of Allah Ta'ala was taken. So what's wrong in that? Now this chacha is asking me, but literally it sounds right. Now how do you answer that? See, the chacha also got confused. All the time he was eating halal meat. But now he came through this. So he found a very convenient thing. Now how do you explain this? So I explained to him that, see, this is a failure of not understanding context. Now look at the context with the Quran Sharif speaking. The pagan Arabs, they would take the name of their goddesses at the time of sacrifice. So Allah Pak is saying, don't do this. Don't take the name of God of your goddess at the time of sacrifice. You take the name of Allah Ta'ala when you are slaughtering the animal. Now if you understand it in context, then you understand what the Quran Sharif is talking about. But you're just taking one ayat. You're just taking one ayat indiscriminately and just applying it to a situation, generalizing, then obviously you're going wrong. So وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامُ. When you got your rights outstanding, then you ask for your rights, you demand your rights in the name of Allah Ta'ala. I was speaking of Muhammad Yaqub, he had a sense of humor. So sometimes he's disciplining the child. You know. Then I came to all this, you know, taqleed and all that. That you either understand it properly, you understand it in context, understand, take the time out. And you don't have the time out and you don't want to do it like how it's supposed to be done. Obviously you're going wrong. One student was asking me yesterday, is there any wrong if I praise myself in the presence of my brother or whatever else? Is there anything wrong in doing that? So I understood where he was coming from. I explained to him, see, if you find some Buzurganadin speaking something about themselves, right, then it doesn't give you the license to speak good about yourself. Now, on the one hand, I need to see that he respects that Buzurganadin that are speaking like this about themselves. But he doesn't apply the same criteria for himself. So I'm looking for an illustration, for an example, how I can get to this child. So I tell him, see, the grace of Allah Ta'ala, which is always on us, you know. So I say, it's a person like me now, right? We are all illiterate as far as medication is concerned. Medicine, surgery and all that, we are ignorant. We don't know about it. So I saw Dr. Vanke, for example, he's doing a heart surgery, open heart surgery. He's cutting here, he's opening the rib cage, and he's pulling out the heart and all that. Right. So, and the patient is giving him 52,000 rand for that one surgery. So, hey, excellent man, I can do it. What's wrong? What's the big deal about all this? Bakri time we do that. One time I saw that thing, came right. So, what's wrong in that? Now, if I try and experiment, what will happen? I'll be charged for attempted murder. Is it right or not? I ask anybody here, will I be charged for attempted murder or not? It's attempted murder, no? If I do it, what's the difference now? Why? Well, he got 52,000 and I got 52 years. What's the difference? The difference is, he's been through the whole process. He's understood it in context, he understood. If there was an emergency, he could reverse the whole situation. He knew how to do everything. But have you gone through the whole thing? If you haven't gone through the whole thing, then you can't imitate, you can't pretend to be Dr. Vanka, you can't pretend to do that. Now here, if that person who's got that level of knowledge, etc., if he's made a mistake, he'll know his mistake and he'll know how to reverse and correct a situation. But everybody tries to imitate that person. He's got so much of knowledge to know the Arabic, to know the application, what's the context, what's the siyak and the sabak, how it comes, how it applies, what the hadith has to say about it, what is the chain of narrators in the hadith, what's the level of reliability of the hadith. So we haven't understood all these things yet. And then straight away, you know, this says, the Quran Sharif says this much. Okay. So Muhammad Yaqub Sahib Rahmatullah Ali, coming back to that incident, sometimes he would discipline the student. And the student would say, Khuda ke waste chhod do, Khuda ke waste chhod do. I ask you in the name of Allah Ta'ala, just leave me. So Mawla say, he'll hit him more and say, Khuda ke waste marta ho. For the sake of Allah Ta'ala, I'm hitting you. Because Khuda ne kaha ki aise khabiso ko marna chahiye. Allah Pak says that such people, naughty people, has hit them. Allah Pak said that. You see, this people's understanding of deen. Now here, we have any ordinary person who have got into a fright. He's taking the name of Allah Ta'ala and he's asking me, I must respect it. But the knowledge is so comprehensive, understanding of Allah Ta'ala is so comprehensive that they can speak like this. إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ عَلَيْكُمْ رَقِيبًا. You see that Allah Ta'ala is ever watchful. He's looking right within your heart. You got a customer there, you got a client there, and it's a female, and you're talking nicely, pleasantly. No, I'm securing a relationship with the clientele. But Allah Pak knows what's going on. Allah Pak knows what's going on. You want to learn about someone's mistakes and weaknesses, right? So you're pressing a button of ghibat. You didn't, and you then appease yourself that I didn't make any ghibat. I just started a conversation and he spoke about the wrong. But who started it off? Inna Allah kana alaykum raqib. Allah Pak is watchful. He knows what you're going. The direction you're taking and what you want out of this whole thing, he knows it. He knows it exactly, he knows it. That's why I say to many business people, etc., but don't talk about deep things about deen. Talk about your business, about how much is rice and how much is dal, etc. That's more sawab for you. Then you're talking about deep things in deen. You're going to talk deep things about deen. You're going to be experimenting in the area that you are not qualified for. And you're going to get into wrong conclusions. Now I'll talk about that. At least you'll save 10 cents somewhere. At least that will be better for you. Then you're getting involved in this type of discussion that's beyond your level. When it's beyond your level, you're going to create confusion for yourself, or you're going to create confusion for that person that is listening to this discussion. وَآتُوا الْيَتَامَ أَمْوَالَهُمْ وَلَا تَتَبَدَّلُوا الْخَبِيثَ بِالطَّيِّبِ. This whole surah is speaking about rights. How do you interact? You've got people under your care. You see to that, you move away their rights to them. Their rights, you move it away to them. وَلَا تَتَبَدَّلُوا الْخَبِيثَ بِالطَّيِّبِ. And don't you replace their good wealth with your deficient. Now, it's a yatama, it's miskin, it's destitute, it's a poor person, it's an orphan that you are taking care of, right? So it's going to be difficult to keep a perfect record of everything, right? You're living with him, so you are mixing the wealth. Why are you mixing the wealth? Because you're eating together, you're enjoying all the comforts together. So you're mixing it up. So to keep a separate record for everything is going to be difficult. Now, for example, there was a need to slaughter a sheep, right? I'm showing you a real situation. You can't take half of your sheep and half of his sheep and then slaughter it. Obviously, it's going to be your sheep or his sheep. And you're talking at the time when there wasn't refrigerators, etc. So now, what do you do? I need to cut a sheep and both of us need to enjoy. But then I'm going to enjoy, then only I'm going to take from my wealth. What about his wealth? So now what you do is all right. Mixing the wealth up, right? So I slaughtered one of his sheep, nice, plump, good looking, very healthy. I slaughtered that, right? Now I appeased myself. I said, now we have to level the score. I took one of his sheep, now I need to take one of my sheep as well. My sheep, when it came to my sheep to level the score, I took one of his pale, sickly, dying almost. I went and slaughtered that. And I appeased myself. Said, see, I settled the score, one to one, one of mine's, one of his. So we settled the score. Allah knows it or not? Ask yourself, were you equal in that? Did you consider these facts? That this was, what you slaughtered of his was worth 2,000 rands. And this one, yeah, someone will pay you 200 rand to take it away. You'll pay him 200 rand to take it away. It's so sickly, it's so pale, etc. So, وَلَا تَتَبَدَّلُ الْخَبِيثَ بِالطَّيِّبِ. Allah Pak is watching all these things. See, this interaction with people, socializing, interaction, dealings are very discreet things. Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah Alayh, great Imam, very great Imam, one of the two most leading students of Abu Hanifa Rahmatullah Alayh, this whole Hanafi jurisprudence and fiqh is written about these three people, about Abu Hanifa, his two students. Abu Yusuf or Imam Muhammad. These are the three people around whom the whole fiqh revolves. Mainly, you'll find now and then Imam Zufar, etc. coming in. But mainly, these are the three personalities that are being discussed all the way. So someone asked Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah Alayh that you've written so much, you know, volumes and volumes of kitabs you've written, but we don't see you writing anything on tasawuf. How come? So he says, I've written on mu'amalat and dealings. Right? I've written in on the subject of mu'amalat and dealings. When I've written on the topic of dealings and mu'amalat, that if someone has got his dealings right, then he won't hurt anybody. He won't hurt anybody mentally. He won't hurt anybody physically. He won't hurt anybody verbally, not emotionally. No way you hurt that person. You didn't hurt him verbally, spiritually, spiritually more? Did you hurt him emotionally? And this is the very essence of tasawwuf, that you don't hurt anybody. A wife came into the house, or you both of you all, and you saw now she laid it out for the mehman, right? Or she's got something additional in the fridge, right? She bought something, right? It was something that she liked, and she bought it. Now, in a moment, you can lose all the taqwa, all the goodness that you have acquired, you can lose it in one moment. And you tell her, yeah, you just knew how to use my money only, that's all. One sentence, and all the good that you have done is you're just washing it out. You see, you don't have the consciousness of Allah, and you don't know what deen is all about. In one sentence, you can wash everything out, one sentence. Imagine if that one sentence was said to you, you just know how to use my money. You're not working for it, you know how I sweat for it. How you would have felt if you were in that girl's position, and your husband has to tell you something like that, how would you have felt? So how you feel offended, she also feels offended. You got a heart, she got a heart. You got feeling, she got feeling. If it wasn't for her, you wouldn't be as strong as you are now presently. Your strength is because of her as well. You are performing, you are focused, etc. It's because of her as well. One leg, one support is her. Your leg is one support, is her. But she's not there in the equation. You can't perform, can't focus. Your mind is running all around the world. You can't focus on a single thing. وَلَا تَتَبَدَّلُ الْخَبِيثَ بِالطَّيِّبِ وَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أَلَّا تُقْسِتُوا فِي الْيَتَامَى. Now the third ayat. It's all dealings. What Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah is saying, that I've written a kitab on mu'amalat, on dealings. If people follow that, then they won't hurt anybody. If they won't hurt anybody, they are gone. In tasawwuf, they are gone right through. They are going, they are marching. Coming to the masjid, like I say, you intend not to hurt. I don't say the person, it was unintentional. Yes, I will intend, when I'm coming to the masjid, I will intend, make explicit intention not to hurt. I can just come and jam the driveway, right? And someone comes and shouts to me, it's unintentional, I didn't intend to hurt you. But did you have the intention not to hurt? I must be so careful and so cautious that no person is hurt emotionally, whichever way. He wants to go to toilet, perhaps. And he feels comfortable in his own toilet. Right? He's got some emergency or the other. He doesn't feel so comfortable in the toilets provided by the masjid. He wants to go home straight away. And now you're jamming him up. Say, no, I was doing sunnah namaz. But you're trying to defend yourself through the disguise of, through the pretext of namaz. He's right. So you intend not to hurt. This is what Imam Muhammad Rahmatullah says. And this is, if someone has to follow this formula, then he's gone. He's by Allah Ta'ala already. He's reached so far. On the contrary, you're not worried about people. You carry on making tasbihah, etc. Everything is getting washed out. I don't say this is not important, but this is even more important. Allah Ta'ala Tawfiq.